This is the first morning lecture of January the 8th, 1954, and we're going to take up here some rather simple data. It'll appear a little bit new to you until you begin to think it over, and we're talking straight now on its application. And you'll gradually get this squared around as to how the basics that have gone in these earlier lectures integrate into the material which I'm giving you right now. That's because we are now applying it to a very specific task, and that task is the exteriorization of the preclear. A preclear, interiorized, is at first on an automaticity of not letting go. He's automatically holding on. That's his automaticity. That's his chief main automaticity. And he's fixed in a bundle of energy. Another automaticity. And he is therefore being a symbol. This whole thing goes into the production of power. This problem of exteriorization, honest, is much simpler, but really much more mechanical than making an electric motor. There is nothing simpler than this. Now, you people who hear me say electricity every once in a while, jump. You are not acquainted with the subject. But let me assure you that the people around who say they know something about electricity don't say so if you press them a little bit, because the first thing they were ever taught was that nobody knows anything about electricity. That always is the beginning of every course in electrical engineering. All right, you people, nobody knows anything about electricity, and that's the first thing you know about it, that nobody knows how it's created or what it is. Now we'll go on from there and learn all about it. Which is about the most defeated subject there is, and that's the common way of handling this. Well, the subject of electricity has to do with an interchange of energy or potentials between terminals. And when you've stated that as a clear definition, it is a perfectly clear definition. It's interchange of potential between two terminals. And I don't care what you do with it after it gets to these terminals and so forth, but it will resolve itself into mechanical energy or heat energy. And this, therefore, can be directly applied. There's magnetic fields connected with it, and they're supposed to be different than gravity. I don't know quite how anybody got that way, but they are supposed to be very different than gravity. When you deal with magnetism or attraction or gravity, I don't care what you call it, you're dealing with fixed or unfixed attention. When an individual's attention is too closely fixed upon a planet, he will stay there, gravity-wise. He doesn't fly off the face of it. And so you find GEs in rather bad condition when you've started to run something on them like, when you started to run any one of these processes, but particularly sound, by the way, for some reason or other, because it's perception, you'll find out that their feet will get tired, or their feet will feel very lumpy, or something will happen to their feet, and their legs, their feet. You'll hear this. And their feet will get restless, or they get nervous, or something like that. This is attention fixed upon the planet. See, that's gravity. If that wasn't there, they'd be light as a bird, and actually could levitate. When we get down to what actually is mass, and what is the deep significance of mass, we'd certainly better go into the mechanics of thought, because there is no other deep significance anywhere to be found in physics, electronics, anywhere else. They haven't any significances. They just quit. They say a potential goes from here to there and we can do something with it. Yeah, we can do something else with it as a new potential. So they take two terminals and they impose and take away space on them. Now, if you were to have two magnets, or actually just two copper bars, and you were to run a wire to each one, and to run the wire to both sides of a meter, and then you would take these in your hands, have them insulated and everything from your hands, but take them in your hands and push them this way, and this way. Look at the needle. You're going to have current running. Might be a terribly slight current, but it's going to be running.
Now, in essence, this is done artificially in an electric motor. It doesn't look like it's being done in an electric motor because the thing is done by rotation. And you've got something going flip-flop, see? Flip-flop, flip-flop. And you've got a magnet in there, or coils of wire and so forth, which are first parallel to the electrodes. That is, there's two electrodes sitting around this dynamo. Two electrodes sitting there around the central coil, you might say. And you've brought these two electrodes closer together by putting the coil close to them. And then you put it vertical. So now you've got a different set of electrodes working. You're actually working not a plus and minus, but in 880 you'll find a resolution of this problem. It's very brief, but it sure means an awful lot to an electrical engineer. I mean, he looks at that thing and he says, we missed something. We've been talking all the time. What he gets fascinated with at first is that every plus has to be a minus and every minus a plus simultaneously with its being its own pole. You can't have two terminals and produce anything. You've got to have four. The plus terminal's got to be minus, and the minus terminal's got to be plus. That is to say, at the same time, they're being plus and minus. Here's your main problem. And that is a double terminal in our category. An electric motor won't run as a matched terminal. It runs as a double terminal. We needn't go into such a technical aspect of it merely because it's not important. But when we say double terminal, we say get somebody to put four of something out there. Boy, they charge and discharge and do all sorts of things a lot more readily than if you put two out there. Because you see, in essence, there are two terminals in the coil of the motor, as well as two electrodes in the magnet sections which surround it. And when these things change in position to each other, you get an electrical current generated. In other words, you've actually, although you're rotating something, it looks just like you're just sitting there rotating something. Actually, you're changing the position of these terminals with relation to each other in space. Because at first the coil is vertical, and then it's horizontal, and then it's vertical, and it's horizontal. And as a result, you get actually four terminals working. You get two permanent terminals and two spinning terminals. Well, you can take four of anything and push them in at each other and pull them out at each other, and if you've got a meter hooked up to them, you'll get a current. I don't care what it is either. You can take four pieces of wood and you could get some kind of a tiny little current as long as you're pushing them in and out. It isn't air friction. It's any time you start changing space on something, you get this confounded thing called an electrical potential. You start putting space between something and increasing it, and then you decrease it and increase it and decrease it and so forth. You fool around with it on a laboratory bench, and you'll learn more about electricity in less time than they've known for a long while. Just simply because of this. He neglected the space. Naturally, an electronics man would neglect space because he can't have space. And you take any of his cases, any of these electronics cases, you find out what they're short on. They can't look at space. They're trying to get away from space and get into more solid things. And their lack of space has taken out the most important thing in the motor, which is space. Space is the most important thing in the motor, not terminals and potential and all the rest of this thing. Now, we go into this more deeply, and we find out that the only thing we can find is really happening in the motor, we look it over very carefully, that something is imposing space on a couple of terminals. And the terminals could be infinitely tiny. So if they could be infinitely tiny, we're just left there with imposed space. And we start working with this, and we find out that space is being imposed on these two terminals. Well, what's doing this? Well, the base of the motor, of course. I mean, just the iron, cast iron base of this motor is imposing distance between these two things. And then you've got something else delivering, quote, mechanical energy, unquote, to this motor. What that is doing, again, by making the coil vertical and then horizontal and then vertical and then horizontal, it's changing it in space. That's all that's doing. So even the mechanical energy end of the thing is imposing space upon this motor. But what thing is imposing space on it? Well, the base of the motor. Well, all right, what imposes space on the base of the motor? Well, the concrete that it's sitting on, of course. Well, what's imposing space on the concrete? Well, Earth is. Well, what's imposing space on Earth? Well, the Earth is sitting out here going in an orbit around the sun. And centripetal, centrifugal, gravitic forces are actually keeping it sitting there. If the Earth were to go a little faster, by the way, it'd pull in a little closer, go out a little further from the sun. It all depends on how you find it. You take Mercury, for instance, it's chasing around the sun at a hell of a rate of speed. It's going zing, 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 zing. You can almost see Mercury move. You stand there with a pair of field glasses. Look at it just right after sunset when Mercury is just above the sun, or sunrise, when it's just a little ahead of the sun. It's really on its way. That's because it's close into the sun. But gravity and centrifugal force are themselves balanced here in order to keep Earth at this position from the sun. In other words, we have imposed, however it has been done, it's just simply that Earth has space imposed on it by the solar system. And so we have that space imposed. So again, we've got imposed space. So now we take the solar system, and it has a space imposed on it by this galaxy. It's under all kinds of ink affluences and affluences. There's one star system, for instance, has tremendous gravitic strength here right in this solar system, an adjacent system, the system of Lyra. And there's a star system that is moving fast toward Earth, and Earth is moving fast in some other directions. By the way, the speeds of all this are quite great. The star system that is moving straight at Earth, by the way, is traveling at 12.5 miles a second. And it'll be a long time getting here. The galaxy has space imposed upon the solar system, and the island universes around have space imposed upon them, and the Mesh universe itself has space imposed upon it. And we go on outside of this thing, the first immediate definition we would get for God was somebody who imposed space. And we have power itself as the ability to impose space on terminals. And when you define power, or define strength, or define work as the ability to impose space on two terminals, why, we're cooking right along there. We're right on the front burner. Why? It's mostly because it works out immediately into a tremendous number of interesting data which solve cases and permit exteriorization. Now, the funny part about this is that matter itself is not a series of particles, but a series of condensed spaces. We can perceive the spaces, but it's pretty hard to perceive, as we go along the line here, anything vaguely resembling particles. The engineer's up against this right now. He, poor fellow, is batting his brains out trying to find a particle. And every time he finds a particle, he finds a smaller particle. Every time he finds a smaller particle, he finds that although it has mass, it evidently is doing something else than what he thought it was, and so on. The elusive chase of the particles is the effort to find something in a universe where nothing exists. And he'll go mad. I mean, they never will find the basic particle. This task started back in Greek days, and they're still at it. And you'd think there'd been enough smart men back during the last 2,500 years to have at least found a particle, but nobody has. Well, you say, of course they found the particle. There's the wall. Yeah, when you get it up in that mass, it's good, easy to find. But let's not try to take the wall apart and find a particle smaller than the wall. Let's try to find molecules. As such, you understand, molecules as such. Nobody's ever seen them. Here's chemistry. Chemistry, in its beautiful setup today, has molecules all figured out. Oh, boy. They've got them all set. Well, they got them all set, all right, but in the science of physics, which is the companion science, they've got them all set, too, but quite another pattern. Physics working with them to deliver energy from them, and chemistry working with them to deliver chemical compounds out of them, get entirely different structures of matter. It's peculiar. They're both studying the same thing, aren't they? Chemistry goes into copper and takes copper apart and says the pattern of the molecules and atoms and so forth in copper is so-and-so. And they get it all set up, and it's just gorgeously arrayed, and they have cute little devices that with a number of balls sticking in them with rods. And they set, this is a copper molecule or something. And they set that up on the laboratory lecture bench. It's real cute. It's completely meaningless. It has been meaningless for just years and years and years. It doesn't even hold water, vaguely, even in chemical theory. But they set this thing up. It's a bunch of golf balls strung on sticks. And they say, well, these things are the molecules, and over here are the benzene rings or something. I don't care what they say. But here's this cute device that looks like something Rube Goldberg built, and they say this is a molecule of copper, a molecule of ethyl gasoline or something. Oh, boy. And over in physics, why they dish up one, they say, this is a molecule of copper. Well, boy, if you saw these two together, you wouldn't even suspect they were cousins. The physicist's picture of a molecule and the chemist's picture of the same molecule. They're entirely different pictures. Well, this is cute, but it isn't getting them any place in their effort to find out what is the final particle. What is the basic particle of which the universe is built? Well, every time they try to get a little closer in on this basic particle of what the universe is built of, it becomes very funny indeed, because they just find out a more basic particle, and they find more component parts involved, and they just keep going down. Well, they go down an exact ratio to the power of their microscopes. They don't go down any further than that. Every time they get a new microscope, they say, this is it. And then they find out that they didn't have the tubes turned on or something, and they have to change their minds. Well, all this adds a great deal of confusion to chemics and physics, but it doesn't add any to us. It added a lot to us for a long time. If we can consider matter as consecutive spaces, why, we're in a pretty happy state. Because we consider it in its most powerful factor. A piece of matter is as powerful as it can be made to expand its spaces. Well, let's take plutonium. Boy, I tell you, plutonium really can expand its spaces. It makes an atom bomb. And those particles go out in so many different directions and make so many new spaces and so on, that there's a hell of a bang and a crash and a thud, and here we go. I mean, but that's condensed way down. Now, here's your condensed space. Now, if a fellow's doing this exercise right, of having 8 anchor points out and drawing them together, he's actually condensing space. Well, right up to this point, I haven't told you anything that you need to even vaguely consider, except this. That power, strength, and force derives from the ability to impose or delete space from terminals. If you consider it in that light, why, by golly, you're there. All right. Preckler has no power, all right? He can't impose space between terminals, that's all. He can't reduce it or increase it. Fellow can't communicate. Well, communication line is a finite length from C to E. And if he can't increase or decrease the lines, why, about the best he'll be able to do is sit on a fixed distance line. A fixed distance line. That is to say, the fellow can go through a very routine conversation. You know, he uses your voice and his body, and his voice and your body, and the meshed universe keeps the space imposed, and he's been taught all the symbols. And one day he wonders why he can't get any justice in this universe. Well, he can't get any justice in the universe for the excellent reason he hasn't got any power. What's he depending on? He's depending for his communication lines and his imposition of space and so forth. A great dependency is on the mesh universe. In other words, the mesh universe has been set up over there to a total automaticity, and he has no power left. He can't impose space or delete space from between two terminals. Now, you'll find his interpersonal relations going in this fashion. Somebody goes away from him, and he can't get them back. Somebody comes up close to him, and he can't get them away. Let's just look at the interpersonal relations. And such a person thinks other people who might be in a better state would mind his being close to them or far from them or so forth. The state of knowingness bridges all distances. And a person who can impose space or take space out from between two terminals can handle distance ably. So let's get the idea of a preclear being a problem in terminals. And a terminal is simply a point, whether it has great mass or little mass. If a terminal has enormous mass, it'll keep letting off spaces against another terminal. You'll get a trickle, a current flow. That's what a battery is, the battery in your car and so forth. It's just a couple of masses with space between them, and you get a trickle of letting off spaces. You know, the pieces of space disappear. You actually get a little bit further distance between the two terminals, and you get an electrical current. All right, your preclear says, I have no power. Well, you immediately look at this as a problem in particles, flows. It's not a problem in particles or flows. The problem in spaces. All these things are problems in spaces. Now, what's a mass? A mass is a whole bunch of condensed spaces. Let's just define it as that. We've got it. A mass is a bunch of condensed spaces. Why does a mass let off power? Why can you set up two masses, one next to the other, and get a trickle of electricity between them? Well, they let off spaces. Somebody had to impose the space on them to let the space off of them. Well, your preclear thinks he can go around and find masses of stuff which will do this. And there's your electronics man. He's always prospecting around trying to find some new substance that will let off these spaces so that he can get a better current between two things. He seldom succeeds beyond a certain limit. Well, this has to do with processing. It has to do with preclear. It has to do with them very intimately. An individual who has begun to depend for his power upon existing masses, he conceives masses to be existing, and he depends for his power upon these masses, will immediately suffer from a tremendous loss of power with any loss of mass. Now, you follow me? Let's take terminals, and we find out that two big terminals will let off quite a lot of space, which is to say generate quite a current. Two smaller terminals will still generate a current. All right. We take these big terminals, and it's interchanging spaces with other things, and these big masses, and all of a sudden, we put a little terminal near it. Well, that big terminal is going to take all of the spaces off the little terminal in an awful hurry. You can see this. Here you have this huge magnet and this little tiny magnet. And we get this little tiny magnet close to this huge magnet. If we could actually observe with a fine enough microscope, we would see that pieces of space, in other words, energy or mass, is leaving that little terminal like mad. Oh, it leaves it just at a mad rate. It would actually disappear in a very short space of time. So we take these two masses, we put them near each other, and the small one suffers. I follow this. It's quite important, because you take a preclear and exteriorize him from the body, and what energy he's still hanging on to will suddenly depart from him and go back to the bigger mass, the body, at which you get a tremendous feeling of lack of power on the preclears who won't exteriorize easily. So they feel degraded. And that in itself is degradation. And that's all degradation is. Degradation consists of being separated from a larger mass. Now I want to go over that again. Degradation consists of being separated from a larger mass. Now I want to go over it again. Self-pride and self-respect diminish when one is separated from a larger mass. I'll go over that again. Power, energy, and so forth diminishes when separated from a larger mass. Now let's take a toothpick and pull it out of the orange. You don't get an immediate observable electrical potential, but we'll use it as an example. We take the toothpick out of the orange. When we take the toothpick out of the orange, it would be the toothpick that suffered. The toothpick would feel it had been degraded. It had been pulled out. Now, that's not a problem in electronics. So let's take a real problem in electronics. Let's take a huge magnet, and then let's take a soft, spongy piece of iron. And let's hold this tiny little piece of iron at a short distance from the magnet. Now, if we impose the space on it, and we leave it there, for actually just a few days, the iron will have vanished out of the little iron. It won't be there anymore.
This is a laboratory experiment. You care to perform it sometime, you're on a physics lab. It has to be a very soft piece of iron. It has to be a great big magnet. And so, the little piece of iron disappears. Well, that little piece of iron, you could say, was degraded. It had lost its self-respect. Now, you want to know the deep significance of the freaker who goes around and says, I have been degraded, I feel guilty, I have done wrong, I don't know quite what's wrong with me, I don't have the force and power to go on, I don't have the energy to do any work. All these things all add up to, you know what all these things add up to? The deep, deep, deep significance of them is a small mass has been taken away from a large mass too many times. If you've got that, I'm saying this very slow and going over, because honest, if you've got that, you've got what's wrong with the freakler in terms of energy and space. And he immediately conceives himself not to know, because he didn't predict it. You know, the only way a fellow proves he doesn't know is to find out he didn't predict something right. In other words, he's wrong. So all of a sudden he exteriorizes. He says, gee, I really want to get out of this mass. And then the second he's out of this mass, he feels immediately degraded. Well, he's wrong, of course, isn't he? Now, the preclear who has bought total agreement with the mass universe, or near it, with great dependency upon the mass universe, gets into terms of having to have mass in order to have respect. That's because he's depending on already made or already discovered terminals for his energy. You know, like you come along and you grab a body. The reason you grab a body is because you know you can't put out enough energy and pack it in tight enough, mold it around in order to make an observable body. You know you can't do that, so you grab onto this other terminal. Now you start to exteriorize from it. Well, you're just a smaller mass because, believe me, a Thetan has mass. In his best state, he doesn't have any mass, but he has mass only because he's hanging on to some old grips and some old license plates and a couple of gimmicks. My golly, he looks like an addict on the move if you were to let him take all of his junk. Well, now these larger masses around rob him of everything he has. Now, everything in this universe is discharging to some degree against everything else in this universe. That's the extreme condition. The sun, by the way, most observably, is discharging at the rest of the galaxy. Very observably, the sun is discharging at Earth, isn't it? Well, that's a fission problem, problem in fission. You'd say offhand, the sun was reducing in mass. Well, I don't know that it's reducing in mass. Anywhere near to the degree that it's increasing in mass. If you haven't been up on the sun and sat in one of its plumes or looked at one of its spots, a good thing to do sometimes is go up and sit just opposite one of its spots and watch it for a while. And you'll find out that anybody's worry about the sun going out is not well-founded. Suns go out when they're so big that their electrons can't escape from them. You know, they can't radiate. They can't get rid of anything. And they get into a dull red glow. The alpha particles can't get out of their own gravitic field, in other words. They can't discharge. A healthy sun will keep on burning practically forever because it's being continually fed new mass in the terms of meteorites and so forth. Dust gets loose from the asteroid belt. Where do you think it goes? You don't think it is all outbound just because the sun shines out. No, sir. It drifts along, and all of a sudden it slows a little bit down in speed, and it slows more down in speed, and it goes in a sort of a vortex motion, and it comes in eventually and goes into the sun. Now, the moon sitting up there without much friction around it's hit by 30,000 meteors a day. Well, it's a big bunch of meteors. You can always send a preclear up there and have him find a landing meteor, 30,000 a day. Well, heck, you can just take one slight glance around, and he'll find a meteor landing. And, you can put him in front of these things as they come in toward the moon. And he'll be very upset because you put him right in front of something that's going to hit him. Then you just have him pass through it, and he finds out for the first time nothing can hit him. But as long as he thinks he has mass, as long as he's sold on the idea that his dynamic power and anything else he has as power is something he gets by reason of discharging against havingness, some other havingness. You know, he has to have something to discharge against some other something. As long as he believes that, you have a problem of terminals.
And as long as you have a problem with terminals with your preclair, why, he won't exteriorize easily. Because he tries to take all his junk along with him. The reason he tries to take the junk along with him is because he knows he can't make anymore. When he knows he can't create, then he has to have. Having this sets in when creation goes out. You get the story of the painter. A fellow will start in painting. He keeps making paintings, and he doesn't give any of them away. Now, by the way, if he would just take some of his favorite paintings and go out to some distance and just bust them all to hell and throw them in a fire, you know, and go back again, you know, he'd start painting again. Just let him get rid of some of that paintingness mass, and he'd feel much better. Matter of fact, he'd start to create. Now, the writer who begins to collect his books, the most fatal thing for a writer to do, he begins to collect all of his written works. And he gets them piled up around the place, and by golly, the more he gets there, well, the less he puts out. Even though they've been published, you see, they've apparently still come back. He still actually hasn't gotten rid of them. And the fellow who keeps filling a trunk full of manuscripts, he's the fellow who really gets discouraged, because you don't even get the motion of something going out and coming back in the form of a printed work. It just goes out and comes back as itself. In other words, he can't get rid of it. So he can't shine. Shiningness is, in essence, getting rid of something, throwing it away. Shiningness. How do you shine? Well, throw things away. Now, people get inverted on this, finally, and they decide the reason they aren't succeeding very well is because they've given too many things away, or they've given too much of themselves. I've heard this expression used more and more times in the Middle West, for instance. They've given too much of themselves, and so forth. But if they're in bad shape, they didn't give enough. That's the only thing wrong with them. They didn't do enough work. They didn't help enough people. They didn't get out and plow enough furrows. Well, that's all that's wrong with them. And when they got their bushel basket loads of grain and put them in silos and so forth, they didn't take enough down to the local church. They didn't throw enough out in the roads, as a matter of fact. They ate it all. That's quite silly, you know. That's bringing it home again. All these data compare. The only reason I'm throwing them into human experience for you there is just this is a problem in shiningness. He wants your preclear to shine and create. Well, he won't create if he gets a certain mass which inhibits his putting things away from him. All right. So we have a problem in masses and terminals. That's why wasting is such a terrifically effective technique. You know, you could sit around here, a lot of these all techniques. You can't, of course, run a subjective technique forever without plowing somebody down. The truth of the matter is, however, if you merely had a fellow waste masses, if you can get him actually to waste masses, build it up on a gradient scale, and get him to waste more and more masses, just waste them, not particularly accept them or anything else, just waste them. Take one side of that bracket. Why, you'd finally change his mind about being able to shine. Now, one of the things a preclear will do, if you have a preclear try to throw something away from him, if it comes back, boy, is he having mass trouble. See, having him walk up a baseball and pitch it out. And the baseball comes back at him in mock-up. He's having mass trouble. He's having this trouble. He can't get rid of something, and he can't create. So creation comes down as the best index of a preclear or a thetan's power, his ability to create. Now people come around him, and they grab things that he has created. You know, he'll create a mock-up, and before he even gets a chance to inspect it, something else will grab it. And he'll give it a yank back. And he starts up his first entrance into flows. Somebody tries to take something away from him, and he tries to pull it back. Well, this results in his mounding himself up like one of the Indian mounds full of junk. See, he eventually accumulates mass. Makes one wonder if Earth or something like that isn't basically a thing who is accumulating mass. That isn't really the way it's done, however. It's an analogy. Actually, these planets get built. They're built just as thoroughly as you could build a mud pie.
Somebody goes out and he throws a terrific number of particles into space. Then he collects a lot of small particles together and gets it to be a cumulative mass. And then he won't let this mass expand. He holds it together and then he pitches it into the other mass of particles. And they'll condense hard enough to make a sun that shines. Sometimes they overestimate it and throw too many particles out, and then you get a sun which goes dull red. That's a failure. And then the Thetan figures he doesn't have enough power to cut that mass of the sun in half and make two other suns out of it. I don't know why he figures this. Figures he has to do with other masses. I know, I've sort of exceeded your limit of credulity right then, but the sun builders, they make new galaxies. There are dead galaxies out there. Real dead. Well, of course, that's the field of parascientology. We won't worry about it. Anyway, when we get a problem in exteriorization, we have a problem in masses. That's all we've got a problem in. When we get a problem of no self-respect, we've got a problem in the fellow having been exteriorized from too large a mass too suddenly. We get a fellow who's too thin. We get a fellow who's been exteriorized from a large mass too suddenly. You know, we can't have. Now you wonder what's wrong with college kids. The dirtiest trick is played upon a college person. The dirtiest trick. In their adult years, actually, you understand that in Rome, a boy was 14, he became a proconsul, and he got married when he was 16. And here we simply suppress sex and everything till a guy is 29 or 52 or 89 or something. It's getting longer and longer. That's because there's a greater and greater scarcity of bodies, I suppose. Well, now, as we look over this problem, if college, this is an example. Here we have this kid. He goes to college for a long time. He studies. He's got these closed spaces. In other words, that gives him mass, all right, closed classrooms and so on. And after he's been at it for a few years, he's already gone to school, I think, something on the order of about 12 years in more basic schools. Now, all of a sudden, he's in college, and he's got four more years to go. By this time, he's studying engineering. He's 35 or 36. But anyway, all joking aside, the boy is there in his adult years. The society is goofy on the subject of trying to make a teenager into a child. A teenager, for instance, such operations as Booth Tarkington 17 as a book. Yeah, that's real vicious. That's real mean. Because in the first place, the reason the guy is like that is because he's been disenfranchised of his first manhood. His first manhood sets in, actually, at about 14. 13, 14. He starts to get a grip on life. That's past the age of puberty, usually. And he's looking around, he's trying to establish himself, and his family keeps holding on to him. And he's unable to get away from his family. And they've got even got the laws in the United States fixed so a child can't work, he can't support himself. And he's got to stay there. In other words, they won't let that boy shine, even though they call him a son. And he's stuck. Now, a child is prevented from working until he's some, oh my golly, he's an antique before he can work in the United States. He's an antique. He's practically rheumatic and got lumbago before they finally turn him loose. The age, I think, is, I don't know, they have to be careful at 16, 17. I think it's about 18 before they can really start to work. Well, the cultural level of the society is good because there have been a lot of good entrepreneurs, and this is newly... just a very short time ago, was a pioneer society. But here's this boy. In other words, he can't exteriorize from the family. See, he can't move out of that mass. When he wants to, because it's sort of automatically set up with the GE that the child exteriorizes in the early teens. He can't move out of that mass, and he goes enforcedly into the next mass, and of course, because of the DEI cycle... why, he begins to think he desires it. You know, he thinks he wants to stay around. He thinks he wants to be in school or something of the sort.
Then all of a sudden, he's made all of these friends, you see, and he's had all these massive stadiums and football buildings and other athletic activities, and he's even been in class or two. And suddenly, he leaves his gang, he leaves his the mass of buildings, he leaves the alma mater. He sits around and wonders, what the hell has happened to him? You see, he couldn't leave his family when he was supposed to and follow the cycle. He couldn't leave school early. He finally gets to the point of where he's got to make the best of it. And then he decides that he more or less wants it. This is enforced havingness, you see. And then all of a sudden, arbitrary time factor comes along and boots him out of this whole mass of masonry and the family and everything else. And they say, now you're educated, you're grown up now. Now be on your way, after years and years and years of educating him to believe that he's a boy. There's no truth involved in this. You can tell a five-year-old child he's grown up, and he'll start acting like a grown-up. You think he's worse off because of this? No, he's not. So we exteriorize him suddenly, then, from family, masonry, everything. We tell him he's got to go out and have a job. All of his friends are gone. All of a sudden, he doesn't know what's happened to him. Here he is, and that's a problem in terminals. That's the only reason I brought it up. See, he is a small terminal, and he separates from this big, massive terminal, and his self-respect goes. Well, now, a person only starts accumulating mass when it's forced upon him. He only starts desiring mass when it's forced upon him, actually. He'd just as soon make mock-ups and make things and throw them away. Oh, he'd go on doing this on and on and on, be perfectly happy with it. He doesn't wear out. It's when he makes something and it's smashed back at him. Then he thinks he wants it. Why? Because he can't get rid of it, so he adjusts his mind to having it. Well, you look down the life of the preclear. Now we're talking in assessment. And you look down the life of the preclear and find out what heavy masses he has lost. And we'll find out that those are the moments of degradation. I well remember a preclear I processed who had been a pilot in the war. One of these fairly heavy, big night fighters. You know, they're very massive. You might say, almost a pursuit plane. But there's a terrific amount of mass connected with one of these things. And boy, that guy had been disenfranchised of that piece of machinery and mass and his squadron and the U.S. Army, Air Forces, and the works. All in the space of a couple of seconds, Messerschmitt practically shot him out of the sky, and he bailed out instantly on a don't-knowingness. You know, he didn't quite know how he got out of that plane. And he landed and found himself in an enemy hospital. And they took good care of him. And ever since, he'd felt degraded and upset. Now we can go into the values of overt act motivator sequence. Well, he probably shot down somebody just before he was shot down. We could get at the thatch, you see. We could figure it out that way and get some resolution on the case, and he'd feel better. Or we could run it on, he just didn't know how he got out of the airplane. We could run that, and we could fix it so he didn't care whether he knew how he got out of the airplane or not. Or we could actually run the engram and get him out of the airplane. Or it'd be that one, there'd be that mass. Now, we could run his childhood about times when he was chastised about breaking window glasses or something, and we probably get some more rather obtuse significance and so forth out of that. In other words, we could run this in numerous ways, and we could get some alleviation on the case so the fellow could still moot. We could solve some family problems. We could solve almost anything and get an improvement on the case. But what is the most basic thing wrong with the case? The most basic thing wrong would be that this individual has been educated by having mass enforced upon him. He's been made to believe that he wanted mass and that he depended upon mass for his power. Now, that happened somewhere on the track. And the next point is where did he lose the biggest bunch of mass? The quickest. Because that would be a sudden exteriorization, and the suddenness of it would take the most away from him. See? Now, loss of mass is proportional to the time in which it is lost. Now, you can lose a little tiny bit of mass awfully fast, you know, and it will assume the proportions of having lost a big mass slowly. We won't go into the deep significance of this, but you can add this up, actually, and it's just a problem in the losses of spaces. How fast can you lose spaces? Well, all of our preclers with whom we have any trouble have, one, been sold on the idea that they had to have. Things have been pushed back at them enough so that they feel they have to have. Now, that, to some degree, that's solved by solving the automaticity of it. You know, fixing himself up so he'll want things. I want to want things is the automaticity. He solves this. Well, the other point that we can make with relationship to this is a very similar one right along with that, and that is where did he lose his most mass? Where did most mass disappear? Now, that would be solved by any technique which exteriorized him from mass and got him over the idea that exteriorization from mass was degrading. And I ran the sample technique on you yesterday. Now, you can make a person exteriorize from anything. You can do it by creative processing. You can exteriorize him and push him back into things. Let's exteriorize him from the family and push him back in. Exteriorize him, push him back in. Now, how do you do this? You mark up a dot of light. Remember, he's not a body. He's a dot of light, if anything. And you exteriorize this from any mass he's been connected with on any dynamic. And you run the cycle so as to put him in charge of this, because it's all added up to an automaticity. In such a way, you could exteriorize him just loosely and limitedly from his past. If a person has his past thrown up at him often enough, he will begin to believe after a while that he wants his past. And then after that, well, he'll try to hold on to his past, and he'll invent various means, such as the manufacture of facsimiles, in order to have his past. All right, so you could just loosely ahead and put a mass out there and say, this is the past. All right, now have a dot of light come out of it. Now have the dot of light feel degraded. Now push the dot of light back in on it again, or push the mass at the dot of light until it engulfs it. Now, any kind of a process would work. You'd say, put out your past out there. Now exteriorize yourself out of it as a dot of light. Now have somebody come along and push your past around you. Now exteriorize you from your past. Now have somebody push the past around you. Now exteriorize from your past and have somebody push your past around you again. Boy, you would get the most, you will get the most interestingly degraded feelings on the part of the prequel. You'll get contempt and degradation and lack of self-respect and everything. Now you can take your childhood home, exteriorizing the childhood home, then have somebody push the childhood home around him again. Or you can just have him pushed back into the childhood home. Any kind of a combination of separating terminals, in other words, solves this. And you just do it in terms of mock-up, and you'll rehabilitate the person's belief in his ability to actually get away from mass and stay away from it. Now, there are very, very low-level techniques on this. You make the individual, these are long techniques. You make the individual take his body out of something and have him decide that he needs it and get back into it. Like a room, a car, a theater, anything. You could run this, really, still in the body, dramatizing it, making him dramatize until the automaticity is keyed out. But you'd only do this on somebody who couldn't even vaguely get the elementary engram of exteriorization of a dot of light. Fella can't get a dot of light. Well, that case is pretty bad off. He can't get a little dot of light one kind of thing. Well, you see how that'd work? Okay, at any point of degradation in an individual's life had it was attended with the loss of mass. One of the many solutions to this problem
is to have him get the idea of the mass, and then have him stick himself out of it. And then have the mass shoved back around him again. And then have him out of it again, and then have him shoved around it, and so forth. Or have him out of it and back into it. And you key out the basic automaticities. Of course, this follows that one of the most basic and intimate things that he's had shoved back at him an awful lot of times has been a body. And as a consequence, why he can't exteriorize it. The basic reason for this is that he feels that he has to have. He has to have why he thinks having this will bring him happiness. And just because the word sounded like is no reason there's any truth in it. You want your preclear to be able to develop energy and to create. His total power, his ability to hold his automatic machinery in place, his ability to pick up comm speed, his ability to do any of these things that you want him to do, depends basically upon his ability to create energy. He can create space and create energy. Why, he can do all sorts of things. He can do anything. He can do these two things. Now, remember, while you're running this, that he's also been fixed in mass. And this laps over into granting of beingness. Every time he's granted beingness to something, he's actually fixed some of his own beingness in a piece of mass. He's personalized a doll, he's personalized possessions, and so forth. He has interiorized and fixed something. And it gets to be a stuck flow. He wants an idea in something. So therefore, the creation of symbols, continuous creation of symbols, the granting of beingness to symbols, and so forth, will eventually wind up where the individual feels that he wants symbols, has to have them, and therefore he can't exteriorize from them. Have somebody mock up the English language sometime and have it pushed up and down the road. You know, move it around as a total postulate, the English language. Have him move it around with bulldozers and trucks, and then have him slop it around with a feather. Then you get a total adequate process. It'll key out all those symbols. Have him move the body around, and so forth, is another process. But this exteriorization and interiorization is very good. Now, let's take it on the dynamics. The first dynamic, that's rather easy, have him exteriorize from a body. Second dynamic, that isn't quite so easy. But a very well indicated process, you have him exteriorized from members of his own and opposite sex. Now let's take up very unique little problems on this. Let's take up a problem of a man and a woman. Let's take up the problem of a man and a woman. Now here's a man. The injection of semen into the woman brings him into a position of granting beingness continually, or putting life and so forth into the body of the woman. All right, we run this as an exteriorization from the body of the woman. You know, exteriorize him from the body of the women, his marital partners and sexual partners. Or an exteriorization from masses of semen. We get a considerable change of case. That's all. He just nailed this down. Now, I would solve such things as masturbation and so forth. Now, what is the score with a woman on this? Well, it's essentially the same problem. So we have to do this in brackets. And if you always exteriorize somebody, you know, have him run this little dot of light coming out of things in brackets, why, we'll just gunshot the whole works on the thing. Have her exteriorize men from her, have her exteriorize herself from men, and go right around. Now, the problem of mass is just the problem of mass. We realize that a body is a body because everybody fiendishly is trying to suppress it from exuding anything. Now, the problem of the body, and the reason it is a body, is it can't get rid of anything. Not permitted to. Nearly every fluid or mass which a body tries to get rid of, one way or the other, is disdained by all other bodies. And now let's take excretia as a mass problem. Here's an individual who has gotten rid of a tremendous amount of mass. Let's just take the gradual mass of excretia, which has been put out by a body over a lifetime,
And whether we like it or not, we find out that he has been granting beingness in that direction. And to be fair and to clear up a body situation, we would have to exteriorize him from excretia. Now, we'd have to exteriorize him, too, from tears, from nasal mucus, from earwax, from vomit. I am sorry that going over the list of things which a body puts out is all forbidden, because it's very bad for a body for all these things to be suppressed. The inhibition of the body getting rid of these things. It has to get rid of it in hiding. They have to get rid of these things privately, and so forth. Anything that a body puts out is not supposed to be put out in the society, and that is why man, as a mammal, only lives a part of his design span. You know, a mammal lives six times the length of maturity, up to the time he comes up to puberty. He lives six times how long it takes him to come to puberty. And very remarkable that man lags on this. His age is considerably less than this. So man, as a whole, suppresses everything which the body puts out. He's trying to keep the body from shining, or trying to get rid of something, or trying to get rid of things. And so a body gets into a deplorable state of affairs. And if you find this a delicate subject, or something that's very delicate that you have to process with a preclear, or something you have to pat a cake around with, why, that's just a dramatization of what the society's trying to do to kill bodies. And there's no reason why we should pull a light hand on this, just because the custom is that one doesn't mention such things. Well, I tell you, let's put it this way. Here's this fellow got an arrow shaft in him, and if it's left there, it's going to work just a little bit deeper. And yet we're living in a society that doesn't mention arrow shafts. And so we sit alongside the sick man and sing him psalms or something, merely because we can't mention the fact that there's an arrow shaft right next to his heart, and don't dare pull it out. Don't dare pull it out, because it's not moral to. Honest, it makes just as much sense as never addressing any of the body output. It's just sensible. You could have a moral or something immoral or moral any way you want. You could have it immoral, for instance, look at the top of stovepipes. You have people run great shame because they happen to see the top of the stovepipe. You know, and just feel terribly abased and be frankly kicked out of the society. But this feeling of degradation is the individual granting beingness continually and being forced to interiorize into continually masses which the body can't get rid of. So he begins to feel pretty limp after a while. He can't exteriorize. He isn't his own power anymore. So the body becomes a sort of a trap for a Thetan. I gave you an example of how he did this the other day. Just do it in brackets. Tell this preacher, I can get the idea of some semen. Now, yet you exteriorizing, dotted light, starting with semen, and feeling very degraded. See? And then cheering up. Having the mass pushed at you again. And then exteriorizing and having the mass pushed at you. And exteriorizing and having the mass pushed at you. And exteriorizing and having the mass pushed at you. He'll run right straight on through to a point where you'll finally change his mind. And he'll see what the score is, and he all of a sudden says, what the hell, I think three rise from that, and he'll be 3 feet back in his head with considerable certainty. Problem in masses. Now you can go back down his life, and you find out that he'll have to be exteriorized from the past, and he'll have to be exteriorized from the future, and he'll have to be exteriorized from the childhood home, and the state of Texas, and any place else you can think of, and the damnedest thing will turn up. His past lives are bound up in this. His sudden exteriorizations from a body in the past, his sudden disenfranchisements of all of his possessions, have wiped him out on his memory. And so they've wiped out a large part of his knowingness. And it is high time that you stopped thinking of a past life as an adventurous idea and as not valuable in therapy. If a fellow has had 1,000 lives and he can only remember a fragment of this one, the thousandth, his knowingness, unfortunately, is cut down by the factor of 1,000. And our business is not to believe or disbelieve or do something. We're supposed to be working with a certain set of tools and carrying along with these problems up to a point where we can do something very valuable with it. Now, it is an unnatural and damn near psychotic state for a thief not to be able to remember to a pinpoint exactly what he was doing in the year 1751, July 2nd, at 2:32 in the afternoon. Now, you run enough straight wire on somebody, the next thing you know, you're straight wiring back and remember something real. You've got enough grief charges sitting on the case to keep you working by running secondaries till the end of the time. What you want to do is just exteriorize him from tears or something of the sort. Get masses of tears and exteriorize him from them and so forth. And here we go. But the immediate goal here is to get him out of this body he's sitting in right here. So that's the one you really specialize on with this process. And you run this till he's so sick of the idea of staying in one or getting out of one that, oh, to hell with it, see. I mean, just, oh, no. No more, please. And you run it again. Now, do it in brackets. And the only thing this technique will hold up on is the fact that it isn't done in brackets and it isn't done long enough. And I'm sorry it isn't a shorter technique than it is. It's a long technique. Now, these occluded cases, if you'll exteriorize them from the Black Horse Nebula in Orion, it's a mass of black particles in the sky. If you'll exteriorize them from night, and exteriorize them from dark rooms, and exteriorize them from pots of printer's ink, and from books, why, their visios will turn on. And this process is simply known as exteriorization by mock-ups. You say a person can't get mock-ups. Well, you'll have to handle that automaticity. You know, two kinds of automatic machines. One unmocks, the other mocks. A mock-up machine, an unmocker. A mocker and an unmocker. Those are the two kinds of machinery. You start running enough unmockers out of somebody. Well, now he's got machinery that runs to all of the corners of a bracket. This machinery normally applies to all parts of the brackets. And you don't really shuck a machine off until you've run a bracket on the machine. You know, you get somebody else getting rid of the machine and doing what's supposed to be done. This fellow has a machine that unmocks bodies. All right. You have him busy installing one in himself, and then somebody else installing one in himself, and then somebody else installing one in somebody else, and then somebody installing one in him, and him installing one in somebody else. And you just run that bracket around, it won't hang up. The reason for that is, it's a very simple reason, too, is because you're putting the universe there all the time. If you don't run a bracket, you're not putting the other people. It's a very unnatural condition for you to be merely concerned with yourself. That's very unnatural. Mostly because if you can see somebody else, you have to mock him up. Okay. You got a good grip on this subject now of terminals and losses of... If you'll try to evaluate life from that formula, all of a sudden the terrific number of your own problems and why you don't feel quite up to snuff, why you feel degraded and all that, these things will just snap into line, just pang, pang, pang. You say, well, I had never realized why when I lost my husband or I lost my wife or I lost my father or something like that, I just never could figure out why it was so violent or something. Well, here was a big mass. You lost it. And when you lost it, you had granted it beingness. In order to lose something that is upsetting to you, you have to have granted it beingness in the first place. That's the best thing a Thetan does. You shouldn't check granting of beingness on any Thetan. He grants beingness to everything. If left to his own devices, he would be going around with that old pepper shaker that they used to have there in the Woodman of Oz, you know, and a salt shaker, something, they'd shake it on a scarecrow or shake it on something else, and it'd immediately come to life. Oh, Thetan does this all the time. You know, even go down to the point where he grants beingness to a pack of cigarettes. Then he figures that nothing is his, and he didn't create anything unless he granted beingness to it. That's a real big confusion. The truth of the matter is he's granting beingness to all the time, but how much? He's always on a gradient scale of beingness. Those things he considers their mind, they're really mine. When he first runs into this, why, it's because he's granted all his beingness to a couple of objects or something. You'll find out somebody will be real unhappy with some new possession sometimes. Well, it's a matter of his granting beingness or being unwilling to grant beingness to it. He's waiting for somebody else to grant beingness to it. You start running a person, exteriorizing from his various possessions, and you run into the most interesting stuff. You see, he can be duplicated unlimitedly. So you're not really exteriorizing anything false from this object. You are actually exteriorizing a piece of him. See, it isn't a mocked-up dot of light. You think it is, but it isn't. You're really exteriorizing it. And there's where creative processing crosses with what we call reality, right on that point. You start exteriorizing him, for instance, from all the bathrooms he's ever been in. That's an interesting process. It'll do more to straighten out the body habits and conditions and so on. And, boy, by golly, all of a sudden he'll begin to feel much better and so on. Now, another thing is you exteriorize him, have him let go. You know, exteriorize him from all the furniture he's had. Some particular patch of furniture or something like that. Exteriorize him, then have him let go of it. All of a sudden, there'll be crackles and pops that look like an electric storm going on. It's really an electric storm. It isn't any mock-up. It's an automaticity, sure, and you can handle it as an automaticity, and sometimes you have to. Case stops proceeding. Why, just what automaticity has just occurred? Well, none occurred today, but when you were processing me 3 days ago, there was this large ball of energy came passing by my head, and I've thought about it several times since. The case hasn't made any progress for 3 days. So he just never mentioned this. You just didn't pick it up. You didn't nag him enough. So you had him get a ball of energy whiz by his head a few times, and all of a sudden his case is advancing again. Okay. Do you dig this? All right. Well, let's work with it. Now, SOPHC, Special Congress Edition, is, in essence, a piece of work for public consumption. No auditor's worth his salt who needs a rote procedure. If he can't process directly from fundamentals, he ought to quit. That rote procedure's there to show you how it's done. And it's there to help you prevent yourself from diving to produce some kind of a maximum effect all the time until you really get over the humps. You'll find out that quite a little bit of running of this will actually, well, I don't know, not too much running of it, will break a fellow out of quite a few neurotic impulses, say nothing of psychotic impulses. Take this opening procedure, by the way. If you were to take opening procedure and follow it with the next to the last list of self-analysis for a little while, you'd start getting someplace. And if then you decided there was still something wrong with the guy's certainty, or the girl's certainty, why, you'd have him kick a few walls, you know? In other words, you'd use light techniques and you'd go on. But your latitude gets wider the more you know of fundamentals. The time for your latitude not to be wide is when you are not entirely cognizant of fundamentals. Understand that? The time when you get 100 down the line on such a quiz as I gave you yesterday is time for you to get all sorts of very inventive. That's because you'll know the basic fundamentals. Now, up to that time, let's stay pretty close to home. And as far as these techniques are concerned, because these techniques are built on the fundamentals. And until you see how they are built on the fundamentals, why, you better use them. Now, opening procedure, has tremendous number of variation. I showed somebody the other day. He probably thought I was doing that just to loss of his screen there. But main thing I was doing was just showing him there were some variations. He could vary all over the shop with making somebody go places and do things. There are lots of things he could do. You can even try to exteriorize somebody. As a matter of fact, all due respect to the fact, despite the fact that Preclear is listening right now, what we did come up with, we came up with a tremendous piece of uncertainty. We really got it out that this was real uncertainty. See, that we just didn't have much certainty on anything. All right? And such an uncertainty would immediately go back to probably there's some kind of a present time weird, some kind of a problem kicking around on this case. And we have to sit back and think for a moment. Look. Yeah, but there is a problem on any such case that must be some kind of a weird problem. And some kind of a light process on something or other might solve it very easily. Now, it might be such a problem as the first thing I ever look at is a guy's name. That's the first thing I look at. Yeah. And I find that normally this is used by pushing the postulate around, you know. Just put the name up there, and all variations and nicknames and maiden names and so forth, and just shove them all around and shove them around and shove them around until they desensitize. Well, sometimes they're not just going to, that's all. They're sticky. They're very hard. So you have him exteriorize himself from the commodity which he's named after. You get the idea. You can turn around and run that on him sometimes and get a tremendous result. Let's say a certain person's name was Rock. And,
Are you being personal?
No. He'd mock up a rock and exteriorize the person from a rock for a while. And, or let's say the person's name was Hayes. Well, gee, Hayes, let's see. It's what the Preclear makes out of it, not what you make out of it. He makes the damnedest things out of his name, by the way. Oh, he's got deep significance on it. And it might escape you entirely that he had to be exteriorized from horses. See, if his name was Hay and he kept getting eaten, he's obviously in a horse. He'll figure this out all by himself. Now, they go much further afield. There are people whose names tell them they have to win. They have to excel. People whose names tell them they have to lose. People whose names tell them they can't start, that they can't stop. All kinds of things like that. People whose names tell them they have to be letter perfect. Well, I guess that's about all I can tell you at the moment. I've cut into your first auditing period again, but not very much. So I would go ahead then, using opening procedure and using step 1A, but with allowable procedures now in personal auditing sessions. We'll just open them up a little bit wider. Allowable procedures next to the last list of self-analysis, 6 steps to better beingness, and exteriorization from commodity. With the emphasis on exteriorization. Now, we're not behind schedule, we're ahead of schedule. But we better get exteriorization down pat. Now, if you're Preclear, you get your Preclear outside, then you tell him to look at a body. You get him outside and tell him he has to find something specifically. You get him outside and start chasing him around the universe and finding fault with him or racking him around. Remember, you're handling somebody who has been disgraced because he's been exteriorized. And he's very, very susceptible to invalidation. So when you get a Preclear nicely exteriorized by the means of exteriorization by mock-up, you turn around and you run step 1A. That's what you do. The second you get somebody exteriorized, step 1A. You can even do it just as crudely as, all right, be 3 feet back of your head, now give me 3 places where you're not. three places where you're not thinking, so forth. But let's stay in the material there in step 1A. And that will save us from having to patch up some cases. Now, I'll tell you what happened to one girl. She was very, very shaky. Step 3, somebody got her outside. And then they started saying she had two auditors. And I don't know why they ganged up on her, but they obviously did. They started telling her to go get a book here and to go over and touch this and that. And she couldn't see these things in the room. Her time span was all messed up. She didn't know whether she was... She was certain she was out, but she wasn't quite certain where she was exactly in the room. And yet they were asking her to go find objects and then asking her to look at the body. You could ask a preacher to look at mock-ups of his body. But don't ask him what is his body. You take this little kid, see? I mean, this 3-year-old kid, and you finally coax him into walking outside. It's the first time he's ever been out of the house under his own power. And then you turn on him and you say, well, now go turn on the hose and water the front lawn. And you say this to him and you expect him to do it. And he starts to wander off and play at something or something of the sort. And you say, no, let's find that hose and turn on the front lawn. He doesn't even know the word. First thing you know, he's going to be pretty baffled as just to what you're up to. Well, that's what a preacher does. He's in a delicate frame of mind when he exteriorizes. Poor fellow. I'd be in a delicate frame of mind if I interiorized, believe me. The way this mock-up's been kicking around here, no rest, on the flat run. All right, let's do this. Let's take 10 and then audit. Just take 10 and then audit twice as fast so as to make up for the lost periods this period is getting. But okay, let's take those 10 minutes off.